And now we're very happy to be joined today by Ali Keshta. So Ali is an Iranian-Australian writer, and he is a political activist based in Nam, Melbourne. He has lived in exile for over 3 decades and is a former political prisoner and survivor of the death sentence in Iran. He's also been, you know, a very active voice against the war in Iran, and has actually written a number of articles for his own Substack and also for publications such as Green Left. So good morning, Ali. Sorry, good morning, Ali. Can you hear me?
Yes, good morning, and thank you to have me.
So to kind of start off, what can you tell us about some of the current developments that have happened with the United States war against Iran? And in fact, I'm noting there was, I think, some recent developments that just happened only yesterday.
Yes, I think that the important point is that that the war is not over, and in reality the war has not ended, and it's simply just changed the forms. Yes, as you said, we have we have periods of reduced direct confrontation, but even in the past week there have been reports of the U.S. strikes in southern Iran and retaliated Iranian fire against U.S. forces. So, military, the conflict is still simmering beneath the surfaces. But more importantly, the economic, strategic, and geopolitical dimensions of the war are continuing very intensely. At the moment, Washington appears to be hoping that negotiations can achieve what military escalation failed to fully secure, namely containing and maintaining Iran while extracting at least some strategic transitions from the conflict. But from the Iranian side, there is deep distrust toward negotiation. Many inside of the Iran see diplomacy less as a part of the peace and more as a tactical arena where both sides buying time and preparing themselves for the next confrontation. And I think this points to a larger issue, in my opinion. The crisis in the Middle East does not have a simple diplomatic solution. Diplomacy can temporarily raise tensions, but it cannot resolve the underlying struggle, because this is ultimately a conflict over the regional hegemony in one of the most geopolitically important checkpoints in the world. The Persian Gulf and Strait of Hormuz are not just regional waterways. They are arteries of the global capitalist economy. Energy flows, shipping routes, military logistics, global inflation, all of these are tied to what happened there. So when we speak about the war in Iran, we are not speaking easily about the isolated regional conflict. We are speaking about the struggle over the architecture of the global power itself. And that's why I think we are entering a prolonged phase of the hybrid conflict, economic warfare, cyber warfare, intelligent operation, sanctions, proxy conflicts, and so on. The real danger is that people hear that the word of the ceasefire or negotiation, and imagine that the structured drivers will have disappeared. But in reality, it's another thing.
Thanks, Ali. This is Mary. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Just before I start, I want to say your two articles in the latest Green Left are really, really interesting, and I urge listeners to read them. But my question is that some commentators are saying that what's happened is a defeat for US imperialism. What's your political assessment?
I think some extent I agree with this, and also I understand why also people are saying that, because clearly neither the United States nor Israel achieved their original objectives. Iran did not collapse internally, the state structure survived, regional escalation produced major instability for global markets. So yes, there are elements of the strategic failure here. But I want to approach this from another angle. I think one of the most important lessons of this war is that the meat of the American security guarantee has been seriously damaged. For a decade, Gulf state spent enormous amounts of the money on U.S. airlines, U.S. weapon system, and U.S. military protection under the assumption that Washington could guarantee regional stability and security. But this war exposed something very different. What we saw was that the United States could not fully shield even its close allies from the regional instability. In fact, the situation increasingly shifted to a world state themselves becoming responsible for protecting American bases, infrastructure, and strategic interests in the region. And this has implications for beyond the Middle East. I think this war shook confidence in the entire architecture of the U.S. Lead military alliance. Even countries like Australia should pay attention to this very carefully. A military and defense pact such as AUKUS are presented as stable long-term security guarantees, but this war demonstrated how fragile this alliance system can become once a major regional confrontation escalates beyond control. At the same time, Iran emerged from the conflict in a more aggressive strategic posture. One of the most significant developments was the increased use of the Strait of Hormuz as geopolitical leverage. Iran demonstrated that it possesses a capacity, or at least the credibility, threat to disrupt one of the central arteries of the global economy. And the changes of the balance of the power, because now the global economy itself becomes vulnerable to escalation. In a sense, Iran's hands are now closer to the throat of the global capitalist system than before the war. And importantly, this leverage did not emerge to dispute the war. It emerged through the war itself. Now, does it mean U.S. imperialism has collapsed? Oh, of course not, but the United States remained the dominant military power in the world. But I do think this war revealed a deeper crisis of the hegemony. America still possesses immense military forces, but its ability to impose a stable political outcomes is weakened. And I think that distinction is very important.
Thanks for that, Ali. I mean, I think that's actually been, you know, that's a kind of really useful kind of overview of how we kind of look at the whole foreign relations and the kind of role of imperialist powers like the United States, you know, because I think, you know, there has been, I think, a bit of an embarrassment of the United States, you know, the fact that they haven't been able to achieve their military goals. The fact that there's been obviously a certain backlash against Trump as well from the rest of the other Western European sort of capitalist sort of powers as well. And of course, now we just had an interview earlier on in the program with Alan Jennings talking about the Cuba situation. We're now sort of seeing the US trying to gear up military intervention in Cuba, clearly because they feel like they can be the need to be the world bully of all oppressed nations around the globe. But I think the next question to kind of go into, and this is something you wrote about for Green Left, the war on Iran has very much obviously been, as you sort of mentioned, has been obviously at a major cost to the global economy. But, you know, while that is true, there is this whole question of class. And you recently published an article for Green Left where you state that the Australian government has turned the United States and Israel's war against Iran into a class war against the people. Why do you think that is the case? And,
because I think that it's very obvious that always ordinary people end up paying for the imperial wars. Mm. In the whole of the history and currently, governments fund military expansions through the public resources and major energy and cooperation never simply absorb loss cause of instability. The cost of the transfer downward onto the society through inflation, food price and transport costs, rents, the mortgage and everything living expense. We are already seeing this in Australia as the energy prices rise, the shadow of the inflation and economic pressure being spreading across the entire society, and working class people pay first for the hardest. When oil prices rise, it affects everything, of course, transport, food, disruption, electricity, everything. So what being as a geopolitical conflict abroad rapidly become a social conflict at home. And that is why I say the Australian government has effectively transformed the U.S. and Israel war against Iran into the class war against the ordinary people in Australia, because government asks working people to carry economic burden of the geopolitical project they never chose. Australian workers and ordinary people should say very clearly that they don't place the cost of the your wars onto our shoulders. We are not machinery of your military system. Historically, imperialist war in Western countries often generated economic crisis, and economic crisis almost intensified the class conflict over the wages, housing, rents, mortgage, etc. So the relationship between the militaries abroad and social inequality at home is very direct. And yeah, that is what I say in my article.
Yes, very interesting article. Finally, do you have any comments on the role that Israel has played in the war? And do you think Israel is in a stronger or weaker position as a result?
I have written another article in response with the New York reporters that they try to say that Trump was manipulated by deceived by the Netanyahu into the war. I don't think this is the accurate analysis. It is true that the Israeli intelligence, particularly Mossad, appears to have made serious miscalculation about Iran, but this was never simply Israel dragging an unwilling American into the conflict. The United States needs Israel as a regional enforcer, effectively as a strategic policeman protection of American interests in the Middle East. So Washington can concentrate more heavily on the East Asia and a strategic confrontation with China. But for Israel to perform that role, it must remain the dominant hegemony military power in the region. And from the perspective of the both Washington and Tel Aviv, Iran represents the center obstacle of the project. Without neutralizing Iran as a regional force, Israel cannot fully stable its own long-term regional position, and arguably cannot even permanently stability the situation inside Palestinian itself. So I see the war as emerging from the shared strategic objectives between the United States and Israel, considering Israel regional dominance, which supporting resistance movement, suppressing the resistance movement in Palestine and across the region. At the same time, it is also obvious that Israel could not wage a large-scale confrontation with Iran without massive American support. In my view, without U.S. military, intelligent and politically backing, Israel would struggle even to the sustain long-term confrontation with resistance forces in Palestine itself.
Yeah, so the final kind of question I want to kind of ask is, I think I'd like to thank you for being on the program. Do you have any kind of final comments you'd like to make?
I think some of the danger of today is that the war is increasingly normalized. People are encouraging to think that this conflict as a distance strategic game between the states, but in reality was reshape entire society economically, politically, and psychologically. And that is why anti-war politics today cannot simply mean opposing bombs after they fall. It must also mean opposing the economic system and geopolitical order that continuously reproduce military instability and permanent crisis. Because in the end, ordinary people, whether in Iran, Palestine, Israel, Australia, or everywhere else, they are the one who should pay the prices of this struggle over power and the hegemony. And that's my last point.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ali. It's been great having you on the program. And I think this has been a very useful kind of discussion.
Really excellent.
And I think very much, I think with our program, we've sort of covered a lot of the important developments happening in the world today with the war in Iran and the US threatened the threats that US has made against Cuba. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ali. Bye.
Okay. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye.